Okay, is everyone happy?
Are you happy?
I'm expectant.
Oh.
We'll see.
Well, thank you for allowing me into your home. I have interviewed Nobel Prize winners and Booker Prize winners, but I have never interviewed somebody who's been on the front cover of Vogue before, so...
Well, gosh, it was a surprise for me, I can tell you. I should think it was a surprise for Vogue as well, actually. But it was such fun doing it.
I was going to say, you look like you are having the time of your life.
It was really good. I was nervous because I didn't know what was expected of me, you know, because I've never done anything like that before. And I'm not interested in clothes at all. But the photographer, Tim Walker, is a very important photographer. And he was fabulous. And I just relaxed into it. And I said, what do I do? And he said, act being a model. So I did all that sort of, you know, that kind of stuff. And there it was.
It was the beginning of a whole new facet of your career.
Oh, Christ.
It's great. So walking into your home, just by the front door, you have this poster, which you mentioned in the book, you... rescued from the bins outside the West End Theatre you were performing with during the killing of Sister George. A great metaphor for how the British Theatre treats its actors. But what was it that made you want to rescue those words and stick them up at home?
Because they were in praise of me. That's why. And it was a very happy show. Mm. And I wanted to save those little peons of praise to me. So I picked them up and we got into a taxi and took them home.
You mentioned lots of different facets of your career with the acting, but you do seem to have a really strong love of the stage. And you covered lots of different roles in your time. Obviously, you worked in TV and film as well, and this voice career that everyone knows very well as well. But looking back on the stage work, was it ever frustrating to you to maybe not get the parts that you wanted to get, or did you find that you just moved where the work would make you happy?
Well, yes. I mean, nobody thinks they've had the career they deserve.
Yeah.
And I want to be as important as Judy and Maggie and all the others, you know, and I think I'm bloody good. But nobody else agrees with me. So you just have to get on with what you're offered. And I've been offered some lovely things, and I consider I've had a very good life. So I'm not in an agony of disappointment, but I'm just a tinge pissed off sometimes when I think that I should have played that and I never did. But on the whole, you know, I'm lucky.
And you did actually get to work with both Maggie and Judy, of course, on another girls. What was
that was lovely.
Like?
Well, it was a bit scary at first because, you know, they're both very formidable. They don't like it when you say that, but they are. And you do have enormous respect for them. And you think, oh, you know, they'll show me up as not being as good as they are. Mm. But actually, they didn't. They were very sweet to work with. And I was bloody good. And I think when they saw that, they kind of accepted me.
Hmm.
But I'm not close friends with them, but I genuinely admire them. Hmm. And I think they deserve everything that they have been awarded.
What did your parents think about your sort of decision to move in towards that area? Because, of course, anybody who's moved into the arts can get either sort of the support of the parents or a sort of slightly short look from them about why don't they get a proper job.
But... Well, Mummy supported me completely.
Yeah.
And had always thought that I was going to be at the top of my profession. And Daddy was terrified, didn't want me to do it. And every year he would say to me, what's your income? And, you know, I would tell him. And in the early years he would say, oh I see, anxious for me. And then as I got richer, he'd say, what's your income this year then? And I'd tell him and he'd go, oh, really? And that was nice. He softened towards it.
Do you think that was really to do with his care of you, wanting to know that you were doing okay?
Well, I'm sure some of it was, but I think also that, you know, he had come from a very poor background and he didn't want to smell poverty again.
Mm.
And that's what happens when you're very poor. So he was frightened, I think. Mm. A lot of his life, I think he was a bit scared. And I'm not. I'm scared of death and illness and maybe a bit of poverty, but I'm not scared of anything else.
You seem to have always found a way of making it work. So in terms of your career, you have always moved, you know, where you have found the best use of your talents. And for example, your vocal talents are formidable. They're extraordinary. Well, some people will know some of the things that you've done, whether that's films like Babe or voicing the Caramel Bunny, or even voicing
that
KGT.
That was years ago. I've graduated to the Anusol suppository now.
Well, a step in the right direction, I'm sure, for any voiceover artist. But, you know, when did you realise that you had this great elasticity of voice and the ability to sort of pick up accents seemingly at will?
I think I recognised it and used it when I was at school, because I used to walk to school, and Daddy made me walk to school, and it was boring. So I had to make up little plays and play all the parts. And that's when I found I could do it. And much later on, of course, I realised that you can be paid for that. And that was delightful. So I've gone on and continued to use it.
And talk about your childhood. It seems that at quite a young age, you discovered books and fell in love with characters like Jane Eyre, and in particular the characters that you discovered through the world of Dickens. And Dickens is somebody you obviously have a really close relationship with. Tell me a little bit about that and the sort of, I suppose, the companionship that comes from reading books like that.
Well, when you read Charles Dickens, you honestly enter into another world. It's a brighter, sharper, more dangerous, more intense world. And when you're young, it's thrilling. Mm. So he took me through the streets and I saw through his eyes the variety of people, the danger of people. And it's intoxicating. And I never lost my love for his work, and I have it still. So for me, he was the person that opened my imagination and stimulated it and delighted it. And I am so grateful to him. I really think my life without him would have been drab, actually, but not anymore. So that's how it happened. I just read Oliver Twist. I was 11 and I thought, wow, I'm living with criminals. I'm touching evil. Mm. And it was intoxicating. I still feel that. Mm. I still feel that. And sometimes when I'm reading Dickens now, I have to read it again. Mm. You know, when I was little and Mummy would tell me a story sitting by my pram or something, and I would always say, "Tell me again." And she said, "But I just told it to you." I said, "I know, but I want it again." And I think, really, I should have called my book Second Helpings, because I love Second Helpings.
Yeah.
And that's what I got from books.
There's something particular, I think, about Dickens, which I think makes him a perfect match for you, which is, first of all, these incredibly colourful characters, which you, of course, have brought to life through your own work. But there's also this political sort of thing that runs through the books, which is very current still. We still talk about some of the themes that are in those books. And in your new book, you do voice some pretty strong political opinions, and you get very angry.
Glad you noticed that. yes, there is a convention among the narrow-minded Tories of the day that we are, as actors, not supposed to have opinions. Mm. We're supposed just to entertain and warble, but not have any grit in what we say. And I won't accept that. So for me, politics is still crucial. I'm fascinated by them. I'm involved emotionally with them. And I would perhaps have been better off to be in politics than in the theatre. I don't know. But I'm definitely political, and I intend to continue.
Did you ever consider a political career?
Not at the time when I should have considered it. Many, many years later, you know, when I was past it, I thought, well, somebody's got to do better than this mob. But I thought, no, it's not for me. I remember I was sitting next to that wonderful Betty Boothroyd, who was the Speaker of the House of Commons, and she said, now, you know Glenda, don't you? You must know Glenda. And I said, well, I worked with her because I didn't like her. I mean, she was good, but not getting away from that. And she's dead, so I'm not supposed to say anything nasty, but not my favourite. Anyway, I said, yes, I do know. She said, well, could you tell her that next time she comes into the Commons looking like a drowned rat, she should go and change her clothes and smarten up a bit? Because, you see, Betty Boothroyd had been a tiller girl, I think, or something, so she was always immaculate. Mm. But Glenda cared about the real things, not about clothes. Yeah. She wanted to... She was a politician for the right reason. She wanted to make things better.
Mm. The different actors that you work with in your career, and some you will get on with and some you won't, and that's just a little bit. But what's clear from the book is that friendship is so important to you. Perhaps the most important thing, you mentioned that you obviously grew up without siblings, but what you have done is to populate your life with close friends. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. And I do think that my friendships are the most important things in my life. They nourish me, they sustain me, they delight me, they flummox me sometimes. But I would be fearfully alone without my friends, and I do my best to be a good friend back to the people that I care about. I don't know how people manage without friends, actually. It is not just, you know, it's a practical need, but it's an emotional need. And I don't have children, thank God. I don't want children. I mean, they're all very well, but I don't want them. But friends, you know, and the funny thing is that when I asked my father about this, and I said, Daddy, I never see any friends with you. Why is that? And he said, he was a dour man, and he said, friends are people who drag you down. Well, poor Daddy. He was wrong about that.
Yeah.
Friends are people who lift you up.
What do you think are the most important qualities in a friend?
Loyalty. Affection. Whew, I don't know. And just noticing what you need and trying to help you. But I don't look for qualities in my friends. You latch on to somebody like one of those twigs or burrs in the grass, and then you can't let go. You can't get rid of them after that.
There are some of those qualities, I think, are evident in the central relationship in your life with Heather. Many people would look on a relationship that's lasted for over 50 years, nearly 55 years, with envy. And I wonder if you have any sort of secrets or wisdom that you'd like to pass on. What is the secret to maintaining a relationship like that for so long?
Oh, I mean, it's a combination of things. Obviously, luck, behaving well, caring, and never let the sun set on a quarrel. I'm very keen on that. She would be appalled if she knew I was talking about her in public like this. She hates that. She really does. But I think if you love someone and honour them and give them confidence, give. I have no special recipe for a long relationship. I mean, everybody says the reason you two have stuck together is because you don't live together. And there may be something in that.
What did and has driven you throughout your acting career?
Needing reaction. Needing to be noticed, a kind of neediness, I suppose. It's not anything I'm particularly proud of, but I think that is the truth. I wanted people to notice me.
Mm.
So I kept doing things that made them notice me. Some good, some bad. But luckily, I have something in me that makes people prepared to look at me and to engage. And so I'm lucky because I have what I want.
You mentioned that, of course, one of the things that a lot of actors discover first when they're at school, for example, is making people laugh.
Yeah.
Getting that instant sort of reaction from people.
Yeah.
Is a huge stimulant in a way, and that you then
absolutely
want to keep making people laugh. That's obviously something you enjoy doing, because I suppose you get that immediate feedback in theatre, but when you're doing filming, you don't get that feedback performing, but you often like to sort of have fun in between takes and keep the troops amused.
Yeah, I'm a sort of slightly naughty schoolgirl sort of person, so I do sometimes behave absurdly. But I think in the beginning, of course, I love to make people laugh. And I relished it and I got a great deal of joy from that. But now I want to make people think and feel. Laughter is wonderful and useful, therapeutic, but it's not the only thing. Life is a bit more complex. So I want to be acknowledged, I think, for being a little bit more than a naughty schoolgirl.
Well, that's really interesting, because this idea of being having a childlike quality, you do mention in the book, and you say that it sort of helped your acting career, but it also hampered it. And I know lots of actors who, I was taught at drama school about this sort of idea of the trickster, which is a really useful thing to have, a useful quality to have as an actor, because you're looking for the element of play in whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
But you say that you feel like it may have held you back. Is it the idea of that idea of being taken seriously, or?
Yes, but I can't complain because I received the reaction that I have asked for.
Mm.
So you accept it, but I'm conscious that I should have been a little more focused, a little bit more. On the whole, I'm lucky. I'm in a good state in professionally. But who's satisfied? Nobody's satisfied, and we shouldn't be satisfied. Well, there's always a way of improving. But I enjoy a tease.
Mm.
I love to tease, not in a cruel way, I hope. I don't think I've ever been cruel. But it is fun to see how far you can go.
What was it? There's a teacher of yours when you were younger who said, Miriam, you were naughty, but you were never wicked. Is that what she said?
Yeah, Miss Madron, French. Yeah. Well, I think that's true. I was never wicked.
Yeah.
I have never done a wicked action. I have been foul-mouthed and that annoys people. I've said what I thought, and that annoys people. Well, too fucking bad, you know. You've got to be true to yourself, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
And that's what I am.
Well, that's one of the central messages of the book. You mentioned that you want to be known for more serious things as well now. We've mentioned some of those things already. You've mentioned the importance of friendship and family. What are the other things that you hope people might take away from the book?
I want people to be kinder.
Right.
I want people to realise that we're all suffering, we're all anxious, we're all uncertain. And as we get older, even more so. And I think that one of the legacies of those blasted Tories is they've made people uncaring, they've made them unkind, and that I don't like. So I want people just to extend the hand whenever possible.
I know you're having a lot of fun doing cameos at the moment.
Yes.
But heading
and making a lot of money.
And making a lot of money to cameos. But is there a part that might tempt you back to acting? Is there a part you've always hankered after doing, and if you were given the opportunity, you would jump at it?
I don't think any of the parts that I wanted to play, I'm fit enough or strong enough to play now. But if there's any good part in a wheelchair, I'm it. I'm there. Wheel me in.
Miriam, thank you so much.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Thanks for having me.